I think we struggle because once you're in the business, you realize how expensive inputs are, especially if people expect like local ethical manufacturing and sustainable fabric. Like with shortlisted, I want to solve the problem of the height proportions. I want to solve the problem of women having versatility in within their wardrobe and not just within my clothes. And I want to solve the problem of functionality. So things like I'm not going to release any clothes that really need dry cleaning, or whites that are see-through, things like that, where it's like, oh, another thing to think about. Do I need a special bra for this? Have really thought out where I want the brand to go and like how the pieces are going to fit into women's lives. So it's a lot of work that I put into it.
Welcome to Chase Your Dreams, a podcast for fashion entrepreneurs who want to build a purposeful and profitable clothing business so they can make a living doing what they love. I'm your host, Glynis Tao, an apparel business consultant and SEO specialist with 20 years apparel industry experience. I'm also a mom to a wonderfully energetic little boy named Chase. My guest today is Miranda Sam, founder of Shortlisted, a clothing brand dedicated to making life easier for short women. How? Through petite proportions, functional design, and foolproof styling versatility. This means no more spending extra time, money, or emotional energy on alterations, online returns, size guides, dry cleaning, or shamefully shopping the kids section. She's worked as a fashion marketer, retail manager, fashion journalist and blogger in a career spanning 15 years. Miranda has also been a guest speaker at BCC, JCI, UBC, and Apparel Cam. Welcome, Miranda. It's so nice to have you here. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Glynis. I'm so excited to be here to chat with you today.
So tell me about your brand Shortlisted and what made you decide to start a clothing brand for short women.
Yeah, for sure. So I think you did a really great intro. I've always wanted to have my own clothing brand. I've been obsessed with clothes since I was a kid, worked in the fashion industry for a while, but it wasn't until the pandemic where I really thought, okay, it's kind of now or never time, and everyone was reevaluating their lives, their careers. So it took a lot of like digging into why I wanted to start. And then I realized that even though I've worked in the industry before, it was never really an option to have clothes made to fit me. Like I would always have to get things altered. I asked our boss at the time, like, why don't we make clothes for, why don't we like make clothes that fit us? Because we were actually all Asian at the company. But that wasn't the target market. So I thought like, you know what, now's the time. Did some research and realized that 50% of American, Canadian, and UK women are petite. So it's this gigantic market that no one's really serving right now. And like you said, women are finding their options and getting alterations, shopping in the kids section, which is really not great because even though the height is right, like we have curves, right? So that makes it really hard for anyone who is short and curvy, which is like all of us at this age. So yeah, and I decided to start Shortlisted after seeing there's such a big gap in the market, and really for selfish reasons, so I can have clothes that fit me all the time.
So what is the difference between petite versus short?
So that's a little bit of a misnomer because petite comes from a French term, right? So petite means small in French, but petite is, by industry standards in the fashion industry, it's like 5'4" and under. So some would say like 5'3" or even less than that. So that's what the difference is. You can be petite and you can be plus size, which I could talk about that later on too. But if you're petite and plus size, the options for shopping are even more limited. Recently, the Gap group, so Banana Republic, Old Navy, and Gap, they start taking out all the petite sizes and even like the plus sizes outside of retail stores. So you can only find them online. But even if you're petite or plus size, they don't make any clothes that like overlap. There's no intersectionality between those. In long story short, petite means short and it doesn't mean small.
Like, would you be able to give me an example of a petite sizing size run, I guess? Because I guess would fall into the category of being a short woman because I'm under 5'4", but does that make me petite as well?
Yeah, you're a petite. Anyone who's
Okay.
short is petite.
Anybody?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I thought that maybe there was a something different between what petite would be and what short would be, but is petite more or less indicates like someone who is less than
It's
5'4",
a
basically.
yeah, it's a height thing. Everyone thinks it's a side, like a width thing, but it's a height thing. So that's why it's very confusing. Like you've been in the industry for a long time, and it's because the petite section isn't a big deal. It's not something you would have come across, right? So not something you would be like, oh yeah, for sure I know what that means. But petite means short, not small. So a lot of people that like I actually did measurements myself for about like 50 short women around the city just to so I can compare like real petite measurements to industry standards of like the mannequins, what we are given. And I found that there's differences. And I would ask people like, oh, you know, you're petite. I'll talk to them about being short. And they're like, I'm not petite. These people are like a size small, maybe medium. And they still think that petite means like skinny. So that's really not the case. Yeah. So that's why
Okay.
my brand is called Shortlisted. So I want to like drive home the fact that it's for short women and not for what not for for someone to confuse that with being skinny or small.
And I think you've been pretty vocal, just seeing what your posts on Instagram about the short tax.
Yeah.
You know, that short women have to deal with. Like, would you want to speak about that a little bit in terms of your experience?
Yeah, definitely. Design is 99% invisible, right? Like the so I like to think that if it's a good design, then you don't really see anything. So, but on the flip side of that is that if you walk into a, like, you know, as a person going through the world and you see everything is designed for a certain height, a certain width, like there's a like a fit model standard, right? You assume that that's normal. So the tax is this like I like to think of it as like time, money, and emotional energy. So first thing you're in the store, you're thinking like, oh man, this doesn't fit me. I need to be taller. I need to be like skinnier, whatever it is. Like there is that emotional tax that's taking up your energy and your mind, right? Taking up mental space. And then you have to think like, oh, can I get this altered? Because not everyone is familiar with what can be altered, what can't be. Linings probably should avoid it. Pant hems, that's fine. Those are easy. But then there's like in between things where you're like, I don't know if I buy it on sale, I can't return it. Like you're going through all this like mental math in your mind. And then there's like the actual paying money for it, right? So a pant hem can be like, it used to be $6 or probably like 8 or 10 now. So to pay money for it, you have to get your item there. You have to drive there. You have to go and pick it up, bring it back. So it's a lot of our resources taking up. Even if you're ordering online and you can see the online size guide, you see bust, waist, and hip. You don't see traditionally, you don't see like height measurements, so you don't can't really tell. Maybe you'll get inseam, but maybe not. And then an extra thing with order online is a lot of women would order like, you know, two or three sizes to make sure that they get the one that fits them the best, and then you have to return it. So that returning takes up your time and energy. You could be doing something else with it. So I like to hope that I get the sizing right so women don't have to deal with all this extra work. It's kind of like, you know, childcare, right? You think, oh, you know, women should all be mothers and she will do it all. But no, it takes up a lot of energy. And I feel like women really need to be respected for doing all this extra work.
Yeah, can relate as well to shopping and not being able to find pants that fit me and always having to hem them, even like ones that say they're cropped end up being full
Right.
length on me, right? You don't come from a clothing design background, so walk me through some of the steps you've had to go through in getting your clothes manufactured.
Yeah, for sure. So The path that I originally wanted to take was just to outsource everything and not to really have to do anything of the technical design work myself. So I worked with a few pattern makers and it didn't really work out. And I felt like half of the time it was because I couldn't understand or communicate well. So I thought like, okay, you know what? I'm just gonna take a sewing course and maybe sew on my own. And let's see how that goes. So that was like six classes worth. I made a dress shirt, which was pretty incredible for like a first project, and also a skirt. And then I don't know, I just really want to learn more. I had that like hunger to learn more and really understand the product. I've always been someone who really respects when singers and songwriters, they write their own music, they play their own instruments, or actors that like go through a lot of work to really learn the character. And so I kind of became that person in fashion world, right? So I'm like, you know what? I am going to learn the ins and outs of this so I can communicate effectively with my pattern maker, my sample maker, the factories, even if it's overseas, I'll know what I'm talking about. So then I took basically a whole year. A whole year to learn the technical fashion. So I started off with sewing. So I learned like all these industrial tips and tricks of how to sew the most efficiently. And then afterwards, I took the measurements that I got from measuring real wi petite women. And then I made pattern blocks. And pattern blocks, I'm sure your audience knows what pattern blocks are, but you know, it's like the foundation of how you design. You just like cut it up. Cut and spread, slash and spread method, right? And then I learned how to pattern draft, which is like the engineering process of getting a garment to life from 2D to 3D. And then after that, I learned a few classes of grading, sizing up and down the garments. And then I even learned tech packs. So I took a year learning all of that. And so by the end of it, I had, during the pattern drafting classes, I had a few prototypes that I really liked. So I took those, worked with them, tweaked them, found a manufacturer, and it was like kind of through YouTube, Glynis, which is really cool. Like you sent me to someone who recommended me to someone, and then came across this local manufacturer. And so yeah, right now I'm in the process of getting samples done, which I actually just picked up a prototype today from the factory. I'm so excited to check it out and try it on later.
Oh, that's amazing. Wow. I'm glad to hear that, that I was able to help you
Oh yeah, you're
find
well
your
connected in the
manufacturer.
industry.
So what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned so far with the launch of this brand? Since
Oh my
you
goodness.
had to learn so much, right? Like,
Yeah.
how to sew, how to make patterns and all of that stuff. Like, I'm sure there's so much.
Yeah, like the educational part, I would say I learned so much. Like I learned way more than I did in university. Because I went to university for business and marketing. So that's great because it's mostly theoretical. This was very hands-on. So it was like a big shock to me to start using my hands and to design and to like use to cut things up, right? But I feel like the biggest lessons were really to not try to make decisions when you have perfect information, which is really hard because growing up, I've been kind of a perfectionist and I just wanted everything to make sense. I didn't want to start this business and like have to work so many years before I break even. So I just took a long time to make decisions. Whereas if I had done it faster and just kind of made a smaller mistake, then I could have pivoted faster. So yeah, I think starting from now, I really am gonna force myself to be like, you know what? You can gather info, but then you need to make a decision whether it's right or not. You just need to make the best decision that you can at that given moment because, you know, no one's perfect.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I mean, you're arming yourself with knowledge, which is great. You weren't really satisfied with the outcomes of the different pattern makers that you were working. You were not getting what you wanted from it. So you decided to take matters into your own hands, learn how to do pattern making. And, I can see that you're posting on Instagram the process of all the things that you are learning, drafting patterns, even like learning how to use Illustrator. This is the foundation stuff, I think, and it's really important that you get it right from the get-go than having to rely on someone, just settling for something that's not quite exactly what you want, but everything else kind of gets built on top of that. So I think that's, amazing, amazing that you did all that work in this past year of learning all the stuff in order for you to really get everything the way you want it to.
Oh, thank you so much, Glynis. Like, of course, I'm not a pro at any of these things. I can do it. I can understand it. And I think that's just the baseline where I wanted to get myself. So if I needed to do something simple, like, oh, change the strap or change the width or length of something, I can just do it. And then it's a quick fix. Then I can do those things. But I mean, ideally, when I grow, after I launch the business, I will have other people helping out, right? And so I think it just makes me a lot more empathetic when I communicate. It's not like someone from top down saying like, "Hey, why isn't this done this way? Why isn't the fabric working for this pattern?" Like I now understand that for different fabrics to go with the same pattern, it's going to look drastically different. How it drapes, the weight of it, the physics of how even like how it washes, right? Like it's going to be drastically different. Because I remember when pattern makers first told me, like, oh, it depends on the fabric, it depends on this. I wasn't satisfied with the answer. I'm like, why? It's just like pattern. Like, shouldn't it all be the same? I did it the hard way. I learned it. So now I have so much more empathy. I'm like, oh, yes, I get it. Tencel from polyester to a linen, it's going to look so different. So I can't expect, like, yeah, I can't expect everything to be the same because it's not.
Yeah, but I mean, now you're no more knowledgeable about
Yeah.
it, so that when you are going working with somebody, you're better able to communicate with them exactly what you want.
Yeah,
Vice
exactly.
versa, they're able to explain to you whether or not, if there's limitations to things. So yeah, that's great. You touched briefly about pricing. I know many creative designers shy away from discussing price because it's hard when you're a small brand and you want to break into the market.
Yeah.
How do you price your products to be competitive yet still profitable?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have products on the market yet, but I'm a lot closer and I have made some decisions. So, like I was saying before, making decision. And I have to say, pricing is one of those things where it was such a big struggle for me. I almost didn't want to do this business because of pricing, going into it, taking some courses. I'm like, you know what? It's not profitable. It's really tough. I don't want to price really high. And I came from it so many different angles. Like I read so many books, listened to podcasts. Everywhere I could get, I would just like jot down notes on pricing to see, okay, how is this gonna, what like different perspectives can I take? And I think at the end of it, pricing can come down to a very not logical way. Like, pricing is sometimes in the industry like, oh, you need certain margins. So you just mark it up two, three, four, five times, right? But in the customer's mind, it's not like they don't know what your inputs are. So it comes down to a very psychological thing. And I'm also very interested in consumer behavior, always have been since my marketing days at UBC. So I think recently I've just figured that, okay, you gotta make a healthy margin, but not to the point where people just blank out and be like, you know what, it's over like however many $100. I don't see myself spending that much, and they just don't consider you anymore. And it's really tough because I feel like the baseline is like it could be Old Navy, it could be Lululemon. Like, well, I can get this for that price at the mall, so why should I pay more, right? Internally, I had like so many questions for myself all the time, and even with my mentors, I think I annoyed the hell out of them because I was coming from such a fearful place. Like, how can you price like a t-shirt at $130? Like, because I personally have never bought a t-shirt at $130. And then they said, well, maybe your friends and family and yourself aren't your customer. I'm like, okay, so who are these people? And it's really hard to try to imagine these like ideal customers who would spend whatever price you put out. But I think at the end of the day, recently I realized that, you know what, I don't want to just target people who have so much money that they don't care. Like, I want to be able to produce sustainable fashion that's still accessible, not like dirt cheap, we're at the mall fast fashion kind of pricing, but it's still in within their consideration set. So I recently decided to have pricing that is kind of like between Aritzia pricing and like the Kate Spade kind of area. So aspirational, accessible. But yeah, my goal is really to have sustainable, ethical fashion available to a bigger market. So if I that means I have to sell a few more to make the same revenue, then that's what I'm gonna have to do. So yeah, pricing was a tough one. I'm sure people don't have to go through what I had to go through, but I'm very price sensitive myself, and I want others to, jump on the sustainable fashion train and just to remove this barrier at least a little bit. I'm hoping that it can make a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I think, stick with your values really and your clients' values and communicating with them, your message in terms of what you hope to achieve and how you're able to help people, right? And definitely, like with your brand, it's your product is solving a problem, right? And it's a very large percentage, like you said, 50% of population. Our women are short. That's a pretty large amount. That's a lot of
Yeah,
people,
we're the
right?
average. We're not a
So
niche market.
exactly.
Yeah.
And we're not a niche market, but it's like we think we are because of the, I guess, the advertising that we see of,
Yep.
for most brands, they show tall, slender 5'10" woman, and you think that, well, that's the normal.
Oh, if I'm able to talk about pricing a little bit more, I just thought of something. I think because we struggle, because once you're in the business, you realize how expensive inputs are, especially if people expect like ethical manufacturing plus local ethical manufacturing and sustainable fabrics. Like everything is so expensive. I talked to someone recently and I asked her, like, okay, so, the idea of my business sounds great to you. What would you be willing to pay for a pair of pants, right? And she said something that I guess shouldn't be surprising, but I was still like, I'll never make money from this person. She said like, oh, $20 or $30. I'm like, okay, that's great, for all the things that I'm offering. Like, I'm not just offering a pair of pants. Like, I've thought it out quite a bit. Like with Shortlisted, I want to solve the problem of the height proportions. I want to solve the problem of women having versatility in within their wardrobe and not just with my clothes. And I want to solve the problem of functionality. So things like I'm not going to release any clothes that really need dry cleaning, or whites that are see-through, things like that, where it's like, oh, another thing to think about. Do I need a special bra for this? Right? Like I'm have really thought out where I want the brand to go and like how the pieces are going to fit into women's lives. So it's a lot of work that I put into it. So $20, $30, like that's not going to cut it because that barely covers labor. In fact, I don't even think that covers labor when you consider tax and like you buying notions and things like that. Like every little bit counts. Elastic could cost you a few dollars. Zippers, if you buy a higher end, could cost you a few dollars. You won't even be able to buy the inputs of for a pair of pants. So I think a lot of education is needed, and I plan to be more vocal about that on my social media channels and newsletters, whatever platforms I have, and really like shine a light on that, because people don't know what they don't know. And I worked in the industry and I didn't know any of these things. The doors to production and design were closed to me when I was in marketing, fashion marketing. So I had no idea. I just knew that samples were expensive and I didn't know why. They're like, don't lose these samples. I'm like, okay, why? Like, we just make them in-house. How expensive can it be? They're expensive. So people don't know. And so you can't blame the customer for wanting a lower price because that's what we're all used to. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of work and a bit of an uphill battle, but I feel like it's worth it. And if I start talking about it, maybe other petite brands will too, and maybe like other, non-petite brands will too.
Yeah, so tell me, why you feel so strongly about niche markets, and why is it worth going into business, and why do we need more niche brands?
Yeah, because we're not just all like an average of something. You know, it's easy to be like, okay, this is a 26 size waist, this 27 waist for jeans. But as you go up the sizes, the pants get longer and longer. Like, we're not built linearly like that, right? So, and there's so many different groups out there. There's like short women, there are men with like bigger chests or bigger bellies that t-shirts will just never really fit them. And my husband, for one, he has like, it's kind of like in his jeans, little pun intended, but like he has larger thighs and a really, really big butt. So stuff never fits him, especially when we're in Europe and we try, I'm like, hey, try these on, these are so nice. Nope, he can never zip up his pants. And it's just like, it's so, you know, it's a little bit heartbreaking, right? Like, it's not so bad because he can still fit in. He just needs to buy a bigger size. But I always think about my friend Emma, who I spoke with a lot throughout learning what plus size needs are. And she told me that, you know, she can't even walk into a store to buy something. My husband can still walk into a store and buy something. I can still walk into a store and buy something and get it him. But being short and plus size, she can't even like order stuff online in Canada because there's not like retailers here. She has to order from the States. So if she has a wedding coming up or something, she needs time to plan for that. It might not come in her the color that she wants. So like, there's all these sacrifices you have to make as a woman of a certain stature and a certain size. And you know, just like anyone else, it comes in the mail. It might not work out for you. Then you have to go through that emotional energy and like hassle of returning things and then dealing with shipping and duties and all this stuff. Like when I think of her, I'm like, there's always people out there who have specific needs that aren't being met. And instead of trying to go for the average, which most businesses do, because it's easy to scale, right? We really need to be like targeting and customizing. Plus, that's kind of like the way of the future. Like Gen Z and the generations after will be expecting more customizable clothes, things that really like work for them. And I feel like businesses now, the ones that are the big businesses, should start looking into transitioning. And the ones like us who are starting their clothing lines should look into these pockets. And they're not even small. Like you said, it's 50% of women in the US, Canada, and the UK. Like, they're not small pockets that you can capture. So even though everyone shops at Gap and H&M, like, you can easily turn those people into your loyal customers if you kind of like figure out what their real needs are. So yeah, it's not everyone's both alike. So I am super passionate about this area. You're right.
So are your clothes going to be made to order, like in terms of the pant lengths or the sleeve lengths of a garment? Are you going to be adjusting them for the customer? Are you going to be strictly DTC online, or just wondering like what your sales channels are going to be, and then sort of
Sure.
like how do you deal with the different lengths? What is your inseam, I guess, is my curiosity
Sure, yeah.
for your pants.
I can't remember the inseam on top of my head, but I had to change it recently, so that's why I can't remember. Like, I had to account for shrinkage. I'm using for this first capsule collection, it's going to be a natural fabric, so that means a shrink, so I have to like add, and I haven't really finalized it. I have to check with this new sample that I just picked up today. So there's that. And yes, starting off is going to be mainly through D2C, direct to consumer, through my own website. And you asked about the different lengths and how, if I'm going to be customizing, I will not be making, doing it like made to order. I can see that's where the future is going to be. But right now, because of like small business, I just need to get my stuff off the ground. And then I can consider like, you know, things like 3D prototyping in the future when I have enough money to hire people, or like, you know, buy those programs in house or subscribe to them. So that's on my mind. I just can't go into that right now. So how I am handling the size difference is that I'm building it into the clothes. So I talked about how functionality is one problem I want to solve. And what I think the biggest one for functionality and versatility is women's changing weight. So it's not only if you have a baby and you're trying to lose weight after a baby, but every month, the time of the month, you might feel a bit more bloated, or after every meal, you might feel like, oh, I still need a little bit of more room in my pants. I shouldn't have worn those pants because there's no wiggle room, right? Those are the little things that will make life a lot easier for women, right? So I'm making sure that on the back of my pants, like on the front, it's a flat front, so it looks really polished and it looks like work ready, or you can go to the park in it. It's not like super fancy or anything. But in the back, I have the elastic, which it's nothing new. You've seen it in stores before. You have like the elastic back pants, but I'm making sure that most, if not all, of my pants will have that feature. And the for as for the length, I'm building in an extra inseam. So if you are tall or petite, then you can like let that out and get that hem, and that's an easy fix. Ideally, I would like no one to have to hem my clothes or like make any alterations, but it's not made to measure. So there's going to be some tweaks that you have to make, just not large tweaks. Like, oh my God, wool coats, the sleeve lengths never fit me. Like, it's not going to be like that big of a deal, just little things here and there. And then even for the back of the top, it's going to be like kind of a tank top. So I put in a little elastic too, because I realized some of my friends who are like extra small, they might even be extra extra small. I'm not really seeing an extra extra small. It might be like loose in the back for them, so is there elastic to like cinch it back in if that's something that they need. So I've thought about these things, and so hopefully they kind of work out for weight fluctuations for women and also for the different heights, which is interesting because most of the time when you think of alterations, you for petites, like you make it shorter, but it's kind of like the opposite from one, like, oh, if you're taller, then you need alterations.
And how many pieces are you starting off with this first collection?
It's gonna be two pieces, just a top and a bottom, and they're like pretty matchy matchy. You can get in different colors if you want. But yeah, just two, and I plan on releasing similar to that. So it's going to be a top and a bottom, always top and bottom, and always to have that like easy outfit. If you are able to like separate them, you can wear different pants with them, different shirt, mix and match, but it'll always be released as a set, so it'll never leave women hanging. So I've thought about that too, right? Like, I don't want women to open up their closets and think, oh, what am I going to wear to work today, or what am I going to wear just going to groceries today, but not look like a completely slob. And the idea of styling yourself is just like one more thing people have to think about. And I remember when I was younger, I could stand my in front of my closet for like up to 30 minutes. Like, this was granted in high school where I care a lot more. I'm like, oh my God, what are people going to think? So trying things on, taking things off. Oh my God, the weather changed. I have to try again. So I can't like, guarantee that my clothes are gonna be weatherproof for any kind of season, but at least it comes in a set. So if you get the set, then you know that I can just put them together and it looks fine. I can go out. Yeah, I hope that's something that is one less thing for women to think about. Just get on with your day.
Oh wow, I'm excited for you.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
I can't wait to see. You had mentioned something about a certain famous person that you had been in the same room as with twice. Fun fact, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, okay. So I shared this with
Who is it? And
for
how did
sure.
you?
Okay, yeah. So I didn't actually think about this until recently. I was on a call and we had to share fun facts with the group. And then I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. I can't believe it hasn't been top of mind so much, but I have been in the same room. I didn't get to meet her, but I was in the same room with American Vogue fashion editor Anna Wintour twice. So I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I can't believe, I've been in the industry for a long time, right? And so you don't really think about these things. They're like, oh, this is actually really cool. So the first time happened to be at New York Fashion Week, and how I ended up at New York Fashion Week as like a fresh grad was I was traveling in Europe, and I went to this exhibit at the Design Museum in London. And I ended up going to an event that I saw posted. So I ended up meeting a business person there. And so I ended up interning in New York for a while. So it was just kind of like a convoluted thing, but I was so set on getting into fashion when I was younger that somehow I felt like I manifested that. So I ended up in New York Fashion Week, and I worked for this or interned for this one brand. And during the runway show, Anna Wintour happened to be there, and then I'm like, that is pretty amazing. And so I always wanted to stay in fashion. So after coming back from that internship, I've been blogging. I've worked in fashion marketing here, being a freelance fashion journalist, did all that stuff, everything except for having your own brand. But throughout that, while I was doing like retail consulting, we had a dinner at Hawksworth. And this was when Nordstrom was just opening store. It was a long time ago because Nordstrom is no longer in Canada now, right? So yeah, when Nordstrom was opening their store, it was like, I think all the Nordstrom execs were there. So I actually got to meet the Nordstrom exec. But Anna Wintour was also in that room. And the retail consultant I worked with was like, hey, I think that's her. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But by the time that I wanted to approach her, she had already left. So that was a little like, oh man. But same room. So I'll just take it. I'll just take it for what it is. Yeah,
Yeah. Oh, well, never know. You may just actually finally meet her one day in
I
person,
know.
right?
Maybe she'll
So,
want to write about my stuff or like have someone write about my stuff one day.
yeah, you never know. So just keep that open. So before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience about launching a niche clothing brand?
I feel like there's a lot, but I really hope other brands in the future, which I'm assuming is your audience, right? Like other people in the fashion industry. I just hope that people really consider other markets and not just like get persuaded to it's important to make money, so like I'm all for that, but it's also important to like seek out different markets, especially if you want to differentiate, right? It's a lot easier to stand out if you are going for a smaller market, but you do it really well and you capture the whole thing versus you try to go for the average and really you can't make a dent with anything and you can't be anything to anyone. So I hope people really consider that. I've had my struggles myself trying to do petites, and petites isn't even like a particularly like new concept, right? It's just like no one's doing it. It's not new. It's not like I'm doing something super specific like for female photographers who climb high mountains or something like that. It's not like that specific. But even like the year I did schooling, I got a lot of flack from my instructors. Like, why would you want to cut off like more than half the market just to serve like this group? And oh, why are you putting out so many sizes? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Like everything that it's really traditional. A lot of people who have the industry experience will tell you to do otherwise. So it's important to like stick to what you really believe in and what you want the brand to be, and then kind of move forward from there. Because these people asked me questions, I had to question myself a lot, thinking like, okay, well, do I want to be out of business in a year? Am I able to sustain myself? Not just to have sustainable fashion, but like financially, you need to be sustainable as well, right? So that it's been kind of like an uphill battle from the people that I trust the most, and even then they question me. So it takes a lot of, I don't know, internal strength to kind of keep going with what you're doing. And I think the other thing is to open up our eyes to AI and like technology and things like that. I think for a long time, especially because I learned the craft like paper and cutting, you know, like the traditional way. It's not like I learned it through 3D first, right? That a lot of times I was like, oh, I don't really need that, or I'm scared of that. But I can see other brands who are maybe more established, or like even like smaller brands who are more established wanting to keep doing the same thing. I think it's important to like at least consider 3D prototyping and like virtual fitting rooms, things like that, where really that's where it's headed, like this whole industry and the consumers are headed. So it's important to like at least keep your eyes open, even if you don't have the money or the resources to invest in it right now, to kind of like slowly build that into the business plan or the 5-year plan. And it'll be more sustainable in the end anyways. The way that I'm seeing how incredible like these like machine learning systems can figure out like how a fabric drapes and then like translate that onto like a digital thing, or like the way that you're sampling garments. You don't have to, like, for my top, I sewed 9 samples for my top. It should not require that many samples. I was learning at the same time, but really, if I had to test, like, oh, I want to move it a quarter inch here, quarter inch there, I have to make a brand new thing. Like, it's not sustainable that way. You're wasting a lot of fabric, you're wasting a lot of time and energy. So, if it becomes a more common thing to do a lot of that, to get all those like kinks out of the way digitally, then you're saving yourself a lot of fabric. And I think that really plays into a small business's like sustainability story as well. So just to have people keep that an open mind towards that.
Yeah, I feel like can talk about the technology and the role it plays in our industry right now, and especially helping small brands be more efficient, reducing the amount of number of samples that we need and all that. I feel like, yeah, this could be a whole other interview.
And I'd love it if you had someone who is more digitally savvy on your podcast.
Oh,
I'd love to hear.
that's a really good idea, actually. Last question. Where can
Sure.
people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
My Instagram, it's at shortlisted co, so shortlisted co. And I would love it if anyone who's listening is short and is interested in a brand that is ethically and sustainably made to come over and join me over on my newsletter. It's at theshortlisted.co. So I'd love to keep you up to date on how I'm doing, how the second prototype is going to turn out, and what I'm going to launch.
Thank you so much, Miranda, for being here today and sharing your story and journey with us. It's been
Oh, thanks so much
amazing.
for having me, Glynis. It's been really nice chatting with you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find me on Instagram at GlynisTao and my website, glynistao.com. Please subscribe to Chase Your Dreams podcast if you haven't already. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others who you think this may help. And lastly, it would be great if you left a rating and review for our podcast. See you next time.